Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com. Radio Network.
Green Edison! Pro football full circle.
Circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle!
The NFL never disappoints. Welcome to Pro Football Full Circle right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network. Sirius Channel 159, Joe Lisi and George Kurtz bringing you up to speed for NFL action week number 15. We're still continuing with two ball games on tap tonight. Las Vegas on the road to face Cleveland. Cleveland was a three-point favorite. Now Las Vegas on the FanDuel Sportsbook is instilled as a 2.5-point road favorite against the Cleveland Browns. That game does start at 5 o'clock. Minnesota and Kirk Cousins, 6.5-point favorites on the road in Soldier Field later tonight to face off against Justin Fields and the Chicago Bears. But you talk about two of the best teams in the NFC, George. Tampa Bay and Tom Brady, Kyler Murray in Arizona. Both teams were favorite in big, big spreads. Arizona, 13-point favorites on the road to Detroit, loses outright by 18 points, 30-12. And Tom Brady shut out for the first time in 15 years. You know who shut him out? Nick Saban and the Miami Dolphins back in 2006. Taysom Hill and the New Orleans Saints walk away with a 9-0 victory in Tampa last night. Unbelievable upsets in the NFC yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a one-week league. Everything changes from week to week. We like what we see 1 week. We hate what we see the next week. You bring up the Cardinals. They looked awful. Really awful against the Detroit Lions. There's no excuse for that. Were you still having the Monday night game against the Rams in your head? You know, and how you lost that? You didn't play all that well in that game either, by the way. So not good for the Cardinals at all. I have a hard time believing it's all because of Hopkins being out. He's been out for the last 6 weeks. He's barely played. So not good. You know, they're in a little bit of trouble here. You know, they play Indianapolis next week on Christmas. Right? We've seen how well Indy's playing right now. Then they go to Dallas. Yeah, Dallas has their issues, but at least they got their defensive act together here. And then they close out against Seattle. They may not win this division after all. We all consider this sort of a moral lock here. But that loss to Detroit hurt yesterday because everybody and their mother, including me, assumed that was a victory. And now the Rams, okay. You know, they play Seattle tomorrow. Then they're at Minnesota, at Baltimore, San Fran. Not an easy schedule, but not brutal either. Maybe they steal this division after all. As for Tampa Bay, you know, Joe, maybe we just should have learned our lesson. And I know I should have. That the Saints just have something. Just have something over Brady. What is this, four straight times? This is the game last year. I remember doing in-game live with Cam Stewart on Sunday night where it was Tampa Bay versus New Orleans. And Cam and I had a million props in the game, a lot of them on Tampa Bay, or most of them on Tampa Bay. And the Saints shellacked them that night, too. It was a much worse score than 9-0. I think it was 45-3 was the final, something like that. That defense just seems to have something over Mr. Brady.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, Tampa Bay did outgain New Orleans basically by 90 yards in the game. I believe it was 302 to 212 in that matchup. But at the end of the day, it was the early season, early first half plays over the top. Marquez Callaway had a big reception. Taysom Hill did have over 100 passing yards in the first half, ended the game with only 150 on the evening. I mean, Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram, they had okay nights. They didn't break out in terms of the rushing attack. So it was that defense. They held Tom Brady to 6-19 on third down conversions, limited throws underneath coverage, did not give up chunk plays. Obviously, Leonard Fournette went out.
in the middle of the second half with an injury. We saw Evans go out. Obviously, the MCL sprain now to Chris Godwin. He'll be out for the rest of the regular season, should return to the playoffs. But I think if there's a recipe to beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers from a defensive perspective, we saw it last night. You need active linebackers that could obviously rush the passer, but more importantly, could play in terms of pass coverage on Leonard Fournette, on Gronkowski, and force Tom Brady to throw underneath coverage. That was the game plan by Dennis Allen. They executed it to perfection last night. And to be quite honest, they were the more physical ball club and deserved to win that matchup. Love them or hate them, New Orleans now is 7-7 on the year, and they're fighting for a playoff berth as well, George.
You're absolutely right. I mean, they're in the middle of this thing as far as the playoff berth. I mean, everybody is in the NFC, the AFC too, for that matter, where they're in the middle of this playoff fight here. New Orleans, I mean, their defense is good. Offense, not so much. I thought Taysom Hill was really horrible last night, but it is what it is there. Right now, they are the seventh seed right now. I think they might lose out to either Washington or Philadelphia, whoever wins that game tomorrow. But right now, the season ends today, they would be the seventh seed. So they are right there. And it's a strange season here, but New Orleans is right there, which has been a great coaching job. Yeah, I know Sean Payton had COVID, didn't do it all. And wasn't there last night, but with all the injuries there, no Mike Thomas. You know, Drew Brees retired. Winston got hurt what seems like forever ago right about now. And to still be in playoff contention, it just shows you something about what's going on in New Orleans there. That game last night, by the way, there was like a truckload of injuries for the Buccaneers. Godwin, a strained MCL. He's likely out a couple of weeks. Could be out for the rest of the regular season if they put him on IR. Evans is day-to-day with the hamstring. Fournette also hurt in that game. He's more week-to-week but won't need to be put on IR.
Yeah, when we come back, we'll get you prepared for the two games later tonight and dive into Week 16 action. Keep it where it is.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
To Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Back on Pro Football Full Circle, Joe Lisi, George Kurtz, recapping action from Week 15. Still have four games left on the slate before we turn the page to week number 16. We'll turn our attention to the ball game later tonight in Cleveland. Las Vegas was basically a 5.5-point dog when this line opened early last week. They went from a 5.5-point dog to a 3.5-point favorite to a 3-point dog, now a 2.5-point favorite, all over the place in terms of the COVID situation for the Cleveland Browns. Baker Mayfield out, Case Keenum out. Stefanski, flip a coin whether he's going to be there or not, but it will be Nick Mullins, the former San Francisco quarterback, former Southern Miss quarterback. He could chuck it. I don't think Cleveland will miss a beat in terms of the production in the passing game. Now, Nick Chubb on this FanDuel spread right now, not listed. I expect him to play because they're going to need him, George, in the fact of the running game has basically been non-existent in back-to-back weeks. I'm still going to roll the dice. As long as Derek Carr's there, they're coming off a very disappointing performance on the road, 9.5-point dogs against Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm going to lean to Las Vegas, but my best bet, I'm going to go with the over here. 40.5, way too light. We saw the 40 total with Houston and Jacksonville sail through the total. Same thing with Miami and the New York Jets. Give me the over in this ballgame.
I mean, I don't know how you could do that. I don't, with the mess that's going on there. I mean, they've gotten some players back, but not anywhere near enough for me to feel comfortable with that. I think it's going to be a lot of running tonight by Cleveland. Might be a lot of running tonight by the Raiders as well here. And that could lead to shorter games and less scoring here. I mean, it's funny. When I first look at it, 40.5, I want to go the over, too. That's my automatic thing when I see an over that low, an over under that low, is that I want the over. But I understand why they're doing it. I think Cleveland's going to – you were just complaining during the break that we don't see any props for the Cleveland running back, specifically Chubb. I think the reason why is because they don't know what to do with them because they expect him to touch the ball. It's going to be like an older game, Joe, when you and I were growing up where I could see Chubb touch the ball 30 to 35 times in this game. Cleveland has to win this game. If they win this game – it's a strange little stat here. If they win this game, they are the fourth seed in – the AFC. If they lose this game, they are the 12th seed in the AFC. All right, their schedule is brutal. They go to Green Bay next week. All right, then they play Pittsburgh at Pittsburgh and then Cincinnati, a couple of division games. You know, I mean, they need to win this. This is the one game you have to win because, let's face it, it's probably the worst team of the bunch that they're going to play. And, the Raiders have a shot, too. They're 6-7. They're right in it as well. If they win this, they would only be a game out of a playoff spot. Tiebreakers notwithstanding here. So they've got something to play for as well. But this AFC North is a mess. So I don't know. I think the bottom line is, when I'm not sure, I'm not betting it. It's really that simple for me. But I see your logic in doing it. I do. Because I want to, but I can't. I think this is going to be an old-school game. They're going to protect Mullins, who's likely to be the starting quarterback. And, you know, I think we're going to see a stat line that he might throw the ball 21, 22 times, and everything else is a run between Chubb and Darnus Johnson.
Well, here's the thing about Chubb. You look at back-to-back games, right? The first meeting against Baltimore, I think he had less than 10 yards on the ground, which was really a head-scratcher in the sense of they didn't utilize their best player. I understand it was a lower-scoring game. And then fast forward to the second meeting where they stepped up and at least fed him the football. He had 59 yards in that ball game a week ago. So you got to figure, I mean, tack an 80 number on him. I mean, he was 81 a couple weeks ago. Last week, he was only 71. So, I mean, even if he does play, I mean, they can't figure it out. I mean, look at the ball game Monday night between New England and Buffalo. We knew that the wind would affect the performance in that ball game, and they still had Damian Johnson in the area of about 60 rushing yards. Ramondre Stevenson was at 49 and a half. You're telling me the books can't establish a line on Nick Chubb even if they run it every down? I mean, throw a 90 number on there. Just put it up. I mean, at the end of the day, we know he's playing. So I don't know what they're doing. Obviously, the algorithms have to figure it out in terms of that matchup. So I like the over. I like it more than I like the Las Vegas Raiders. You have, obviously, Derek Carr over Nick Mullins. I like that matchup as well. And there's some playmakers for the Raiders that can step up, Hunter Renfrow in particular. So we'll see how that game does play out. The late game, I mean, looks like, and all signs point to Minnesota winning this ball game by double digits against the Chicago Bears. Chicago didn't step up last week. They made it a game for basically three quarters against Aaron Rodgers and the crew. But in the end, Green Bay did pull away with a 45-30 win and cover as an 11.5, 12-point favorite against the Chicago Bears. This line opened up at basically 3.5, 4 for Kirk Cousins and the crew. It's ballooned to 6.5. Georgie boy. And you know what? As much as I hate his guts, I'm going to take Matt Nagy. I'm going to take Justin Fields plus the basic touchdown in this ball game because Minnesota's a team that when you expect them to win, that's when they lose. So give me Chicago and the under in this ball game.
Yeah, I'm not really, I don't know how you can trust Chicago. It's tough. This is a big game for Minnesota. They need to be on this game as well. They're right in the middle of the playoff hunt as also here. I just have a tough time trusting Chicago. I love the fact that Fields is playing here. Montgomery's there. The way to beat Minnesota, though, is through the air. Got to throw that football. I just don't know if Chicago's equipped. You know, can Fields do that? Can he do it consistently? That might be another big question I might want to ask you. Can he do it consistently there? They're unlikely to have Allen Robinson, I believe, tonight. I don't think he's going to pass the call.
He's out.
Right. They weren't using him anyway, though. Right?
Yeah,
do you care? I mean,
it's amazing.
Right? They didn't bother. Weird how you don't use the best guy there. Marquise Goodwin is also doubtful, so it's Darnell Mooney or bust tonight. And the tight ends there, Kmet and Graham are healthy. Can they do enough? Adam Thielen also not playing for Minnesota. Jefferson's going, I think, going to have a monster night tonight. Once again, I'm with you here. I just don't know if I can pull a trigger on this. I just
pull
don't
it,
know.
George. Pull it. You got to pull it. I'll tell you what. If I'm pulling it tonight. But I'm definitely pulling it tomorrow, George, with the two ball games. And we talk about line movement. You want to talk about market fluctuation? Look at the line in terms of Philadelphia and Washington for tomorrow night's game in terms of this breakdown. This line was basically, what, 3.5, 4 when it opened with Jalen Hurts and the crew, ballooned up to 6.5, 7.5 when there were some COVID issues with Taylor Heinicke and Kyle Allen. Got as high as 13.5 midweek. Now the game gets pushed back, and here it is. Philadelphia only a 6.5-point favorite over the Washington football team. 42.5 is the total. I like Washington outright. Washington and the over in this ball game, George.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go Philadelphia in this game. I'm not going to feel Washington at all. They still have COVID problems, by the way. Neither quarterback has cleared yet. I think they do believe that at least one will, unlike what happened for Cleveland here. They'll have McLaurin back. I think he has to pass the independent guy. Everything else is done. He's had two full practices, so I assume he's going to be back. Ricky Seals-Jones is questionable. He should be okay. They might not have Brandon Scherff, though. Their right guard, that could be an issue. Their center is on COVID. Their right tackle's in COVID. So their whole offensive line could be three-fifths could be down. That's an issue here. And they have multiple members on defense who are still in the COVID protocols, although only two starters, but those two starters are both in the secondary, Fuller and Curl. So the issues all over the place for Washington here. Philadelphia, once again, this is a massively important game. Massively important here. Philadelphia coming off the bye week, extra rest. I do believe it'll be Hurts at starting quarterback, not Minshew. Hurts is taking most of the practice snaps there. I just don't know if he'll be the normal Hurts as far as being able to run the ball. Maybe he will be, maybe he won't. If not, that could be interesting. His throwing part of his game is not the greatest here. But I'm going to be on Philadelphia. Just too many problems for Washington for me. But you're right, this spread has gone all over the place. So I think it was 14 points or so at one point. Now it's back down to 6.5. But I don't know if that means they know anything, because the spread between the Cleveland game was also scattered all over the place, and it's still scattering all over the place. Because I think they thought Vegas thought that once again Mayfield or Keenan would play. Ended up they're not.
Yeah, very interesting. Total is set at 42.5. The other line that's seen some movement is the LA Rams and the Seattle Seahawks. Got as low as 4 in favor of Stafford and the crew. Back up to 7 now with the delay and postponement. 45.5 is the total. When we come back, we'll talk about the San Francisco 49ers and Tennessee Titans coming up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
All I needed was one score by Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons, and I kill it with a 14 parlay that I had going last night, right? They had 8 cracks inside the goal line, the 5-yard line. Can't get it done. They lose that ball game, George. 31-13, San Francisco prevails. Big day out of Wilson that stepped up. He was implemented in the offense, over 100 rushing yards on the afternoon. Deebo Samuel, as always, somehow, some way, always scores a rushing touchdown. George Kittle, 6 receptions, 90 yards. And San Francisco now at 8-6 has bounced back into form in the second half of the season. A quality win and cover over the Atlanta Falcons. They now square off in week number 16. Against a team that is searching for answers, and that's Ryan Tannehill and the Tennessee Titans. They had a 13-3 first-half lead over Big Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh. Didn't score in the second half, get shut out. One-dimensional. Pitt prevails 19-13. They have no running game, Tennessee, without Derrick Henry. They're completely one-dimensional. Julio Jones was in that lineup, didn't matter. Ryan Tannehill, basically 150 passing yards on the afternoon. That's not going to get it done. Now, I understand there are injuries, but at the end of the day, this team has no identity, no offensive explosiveness. And when you look at the matchup going up this week against the San Francisco 49ers, they're catching 3.5 at home. I don't know how they win this ball game against a very physical defense in San Fran.
They've got problems. They've got problems. They're dying. They're a dying team. Julio Jones left that game yesterday early because of the hamstring. It doesn't look like A.J. Brown's going to play on Thursday. He's close, but the short week probably hampers him there. And maybe the week after that he returns there. So I don't know where the offense is going. I don't. And the way to beat San Fran is through the air. You know, Atlanta, you said it. They had no problem moving the football. They just had red zone problems. That was a bend but don't break, and it could be the same thing versus Tennessee, but Tennessee doesn't even have the weapons that Atlanta has. Not that Atlanta has great weapons. So I feel the same way as you. Give me San Fran. They're getting hot at the right time here. Getting hot at the right time. They're playing well. I'm going to be big time on San Fran on Thursday night.
Let me ask you this, George, deeper, okay? Deeper in terms of Tennessee. Is Julio Jones considered a bust now in terms of the off-season acquisition? I mean, can we consider him a bust? I mean, we're not talking athletic ability. We know that, you judge players when they're 100% healthy, but the guy's never healthy. For the amount of money that they spent to get this team over the hump, and now to see their star, Derrick Henry, not there, and not have a stitch of a passing game heading into week number 16. Could we consider this acquisition a waste of time and a bust? I mean, they got rid of Corey Davis. Granted, he wasn't living up to expectations, but you got to be honest now. Nick Westbrook isn't the answer. Could they sign a guy that could at least run a 4-3 and take the top off an opposing secondary? I mean, heck, the Giants got John Ross that at least paid more dividends at this point in the year than Julio Jones.
Jones has 25 receptions for 369 yards and no touchdowns.
Bust.
Yeah, that would be a bust. Listen, if he comes back for the playoffs and has a big playoffs, oh, then all is forgiven, right? All is forgiven. But it's really hard to think that's going to happen at this point. So yes, he's an absolute trade bust here. What is it, 3 years, $66 million contract. The Titans are not paying $22 million. That's what it breaks down to per year there. I see the signing bonus or whatever. I forget the terms of the trade. I'm sure they're not paying that amount. But still, it's a bust. Anyway, you look at it, it's a bust. Unless, say it again, he comes back in January and, you know, he has four touchdowns, catching balls, they go to the Super Bowl. Sure, that's all anybody will remember. But right now, he's a huge bust.
Yeah, I agree with you. And let's go back to that victory over the Rams, right, where they picked off Matt Stafford. That was the first game, or the second game, with Derrick Henry out of the lineup. Adrian Peterson was signed. They win that ball game convincingly. And everybody thought, and myself included, this was one of the best teams in the AFC. If they could overcome the deficiencies of the running game and that defense steps up and plays out the way they did, hey, they could beat anybody, right? I mean, they knocked off Pat Mahomes, forced turnovers. And then all of a sudden, you fast forward, they lose as a 10.5-point favorite to Houston outright. They can't move the football against a quality defense in New England. And now a Pittsburgh offense that basically was inconsistent for much of the first half. But not only that, when's the last time Pittsburgh put together a four-quarter effort offensively, right? It's always been like one half or the other. And you would think that the veteran team in Ryan Tannehill would take advantage of that, but the defense had no answers in the second half.
Well, let's go over a couple of things here before we crush Tennessee. Any team that loses their top running back, one of the best players in the game, and both starting wide receivers is going to have problems. All right, any team. All right, so I'm not going to knock him for that. And Tannehill really hasn't played well all year. Even before the injuries took effect, he wasn't playing all that great here. That game yesterday, defense ended up letting up 19 points, and the last two field goals that won the game for Pittsburgh, those came on turnovers. Defense played fine. Played fine yesterday. That's a game you have to win. The offense lost that game there. I don't know if you watched the game. One major pet peeve of mine on the last drive, I mean, I was flipping out here. Fourth and, I want to say, 7 on the final play. And they run a 6-yard pattern, and they catch the ball, and they don't get the first. What are you doing? How does every receiver not run at least to the first down line? That is street football. We knew to do that. What's the point? They'll let you catch it before it. The tackling game's over. And they almost got the nicest spot ever, by the way, because I don't know what that linesman was doing, spotting that ball anywhere near the first down. The fact that they had to do a measure was a joke. I think it would have been overturned on replay anyway. He was a yard short. What are you doing, though? Why? I guess I won't blame Tannehill for that. I guess he can't tell if it's 6 or 7 yards down the field. But why is that receiver running short of the first down marker? I'm just flipping there. I'm like, what are you doing here? Why is that play being run? So just angry there. But the bottom line is this. I'm not blaming the defense for that game. He really let up 19 points. But like I said, last two field goals were on turnovers by the offense. So and I think they were both by Tannehill, by the way, the center exchange and an interception. So issues there. But like I said, no team is surviving without their top two wide receivers and their top running back. And the running back is one of the best, maybe the best running back in the game.
No, I understand. I understand to bash them, but at the end of the day, you got to throw for more than 150 yards in a ball game. I mean, it's not just one game. I mean, Ryan Tannehill, what did he throw in the victory over L.A.? They didn't have to throw, obviously, but because they had a double-digit lead. But he didn't throw for more than 150 yards in that performance. Threw for basically 93 on the road in New England. I mean, come on now. You could. I'm not saying. I understand the production is not going to be where A.J. Brown and Julio Jones in that lineup, but you still got to find guys that can catch the football, that can run patterns. You can't play it close to the vest. You can't play Vic Fangio, Joe Judge football, you know? At the end of the day, I mean, you're just asking for losses in today's NFL. That's the way the game is played. On you throw 10 passes over 20 yards or more, I guarantee you you're getting 6 to 7 pass interference calls. No, George? I mean, at least attempt to run a deep pass. Throw, if the guy's double covered, what do you care? Throw it over his head. If the guy gets touched, they're going to throw the flag anyway.
That depends on the crew as far as the PI. Lord knows you want the Cowboy crew for that Raider game on Thursday, Thanksgiving. Lots of PIs there. But, you know, we saw last night they were letting the guys play. And it's always what I prefer, by the way, when the refs let them play. Unless it's obvious and you just can't stop. If the guy gets tackled, fine. I will not let these guys play. No one pays to see your yellow flags. Except, but I'll... Tannehill was, I said, my little speech there. Tannehill hasn't played well all season long. He really hasn't. And you think, now you're taking away his top running back, his top two receivers. It's kind of amazing they got to where they got when you think about it. Now it's just weighing down. It's just weighing down on them that they don't have these guys. And I don't know when they're going to get Jones back with the hamstring. And I kind of doubt that he'll be healthy all season long. You know, so he right. can't even be he can't even be a decoy out there. Yeah, he can't even be a decoy because he just can't play. I do think they'll have A.J. Brown back for the last two games against Miami and Houston. I think they'll get him back then. So maybe they can fix things here. And maybe they can still win the division, Joe. Maybe they can. But Indianapolis is coming on and coming on strong. And that four-game lead now, including the tiebreaker, which is all in Tennessee's hands, now we're down to two. It's a little bit more interesting.
Jonathan Taylor and Carson Wentz and that offense are consistent. They're putting up numbers, and that defense is coming into form at just the right time in the regular season. You spoke about Houston. So happy that Trevor Lawrence and the Jacksonville Jaguars can see the clear direction of the team now that they cut the fat Urban Meyer. He's gone. He apologized. But I'm so happy Trevor Lawrence can see the light now because he stepped up with another pitiful performance, over 200 yards passing, no touchdowns, no interceptions. This team laid an egg as basically a 5.5-point favorite over Houston that they lost week number one against. Couldn't even move the football, measly 16 points in that ball game. Hey, Trevor, get your ass back into the film room and break down some coverage because you suck. At the end of the day, he's the number one draft pick. He hasn't lived up to expectations, and this team needs to get their head on straight. But I will say this, Houston, I give them a lot of credit. Determined. They knocked off Jacksonville two times that they played them. Davis Mills over 200. This team plays with some heart when they're underdogs.
All right, Joe. You got to do the draft over last year. What quarterback you taking first?
Based off of Lawrence, the performance right Lance, now, obviously Mac Fields, Jones. Mac Wilson, Jones, Jones, Fields. Mac, if we're going off the performance of what we've seen so far, I would still take Mac Jones, depending upon the system, Justin Fields, and maybe Trey Lance because we haven't seen enough.
So, the one and two picks look bad, Lawrence and Wilson. I'm probably with you there, although I might take Fields over Mac Jones.
Well, I'm still a Fields believer. In 2 or 3 years out, I think we're going to be talking about Justin Fields and the rest. When we come back, we'll break down Week 16.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Off talking about Trevor Lawrence and the Jacksonville Jaguars laying 5.5 points yesterday to the Houston Texans and Davis Mills. They got blown out at home, 30-16 road win for the Houston Texans. Like I mentioned, Davis Mills stepped up. Trevor Lawrence did not. Fast forward to week 16. It's a battle of number one and number two in terms of the draft picks. We have Zach Wilson at home as a 2.5-point favorite over top-ranked Trevor Lawrence. This weekend in MetLife, Jets played well. They were catching 10.5 against the Miami Dolphins, had a first-half lead. Second half, it was tied. And then all of a sudden, Tua hit Devontae Parker. Dolphins win that ball game going away 31-24. That game sailed through the 42-point total. Great call by George. He was on that total at 41. So was I. That was one of my winners yesterday. I needed that. But now Jacksonville catching 2.5 points on the road in MetLife, George. I don't know. I mean, flip a coin, but you know what? I think this is a spot where Trevor Lawrence does break out because it is Zach Wilson. They're on the road in New York. I think he does perform well, and I'm gonna take Jacksonville plus the 2.5 on the road in MetLife this weekend.
Nope, not betting it. Two bad teams, not doing it. The Jets, strange game yesterday. They didn't score anything on offense the last 39 minutes of that game.
I know.
As Zach Wilson played well for the first 20, they were doing a lot of gadget plays too, which were fun to watch, by the way. And I don't know about you, watching Zach Wilson in that game yesterday, all the running around he was doing, just remind me of Archie Manning back in the Saints days in the 70s, where he was running. It seemed like he was always running for his life behind that offensive line. That's what it reminded me of yesterday. I don't know why, but it did. I'm probably going to lean towards the Jets here, but I think it'll be a big James Robinson game. The Jets cannot stop the run. We saw that yesterday with the Dolphins. I mean, Duke Johnson scoring touchdowns there. Their top two running backs hadn't played all week because of COVID, yet they still rushed for over 180 yards. All right, so I'll give that to James Robinson. I think he'll have a big week here. But at home, two bad teams, sure, give him the Jets. But I don't want to. It's another game I am just so depressed that it'll be on TV here and that we're forced to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, too, George, is that, you know, Zach Wilson, I agree with you. He's shown glimpses. But again, just like Trevor Lawrence, we haven't seen a four-quarter effort from start to finish. It's been one thing. I mean, he was over 100 yards in the first half. He was hitting his wide receiver, Jamison Crowder. We saw Berrios get involved. Second half, Dolphins and Brian Flores made adjustments, and it's like they never wanted to open up the playbook after that. It's like, okay, we're in this ball game. Let's try and win it close. Let's try and run the football with Coleman, and maybe we can get out of here with a 3-point win. You have nothing to lose at that point. I understand that you're on the road. I understand you're trying to develop players, but at the end of the day, open it up. You're trying to also develop your quarterback, not just for the end of the regular season. You're trying to develop them for 2022. And this is a team that's fighting for a playoff spot in Miami. Miami's won six straight, right? After they come back and they pick off Tua and the ball game is tied, their defense allows Tua to come right down the field, right? They win, they score 31-24, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, it's like the sales are, that's it, it's over, we're done. Zach Wilson couldn't complete a pass. I mean, at the end of the day, you have to develop a game plan that fits his strengths, and I haven't seen that from the offensive staff yet.
No, I haven't seen it either. I think they've got some issues. It's a slow process, so I'm willing to give it time here. I think for all these rookie quarterbacks, I know that question I asked you at the end of the last segment, which rookie quarterback would you take right now? Most of them have not looked good. Oh, even Mac Jones, they protect him a lot by not asking him to do much. So we'll see here. I think it's coming back to what it's really old school for all these quarterbacks. None of them really taking off in year one. Mac Jones would be the closest to. But it takes time to learn this position. I think we're seeing that this year. So I'm not giving up on any of these guys, but Wilson doesn't look good. I thought they made a mistake taking him anyway. I said I would have taken Fields. Lawrence, I thought, would be fine, but that's not working out yet either. Lance, we haven't seen yet. So we'll see here. I don't want to give up. I think the Jets still need better skill position players to take advantage of some of his skills, and a better tight end would be nice, a true number one wide receiver. We'll see what they do in the offseason here. But slow process.
Yeah, I agree with you. So we'll see how that plays out. That is a 1 o'clock kick in MetLife. Two teams that were underdogs yesterday, I gave you their all. One outright on the road in Denver in Mile High. That was Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals. That line inched up to Denver -3 at the start of the game, and they walked away Cincinnati with a 15-10 victory. Teddy Bridgewater did get knocked out of that ballgame, gave way to Drew Lock. It didn't matter. Joe Burrow trailed in that matchup in the second half, 10-9 after Drew Lock threw a touchdown. Following drive, Joe Burrow, boom, 58-yard touchdown pass, gives the Bengals the 15-10 lead. The defense closed the door, and now they're facing Baltimore. And Tyler Huntley, that looked dead and buried in the second half against Aaron Rodgers and the crew, right? 31-17. All of a sudden, Tyler Huntley thought he was playing in the Pac-12 championship game in Salt Lake City with Kyle Whittingham. Unbelievable second half output. The kid's a gamer. He scores the potential game-tying touchdown. And what happens? John Harbaugh, he thinks he's in Vegas, baby. Let's go for two. I always go for two. Second time it hasn't worked out. I will say this, George. It was the right call because you run the risk in overtime of what we saw on Thursday night, where you go to overtime, you lay up like tin cup. All of a sudden, Pat Mahomes and Travis Kelce walk away with the win and cover, something that obviously Baltimore couldn't afford. They had their offense hitting on all cylinders. You had a hot quarterback. You go for it. That's what I would do.
In this situation, I would have as well. I think the going for the two last time was probably the biggest debate you and I have had all season. It's recency bias. We may have had others, but you get my point. But that situation was different. That was pretty much the last play of the game, and I wouldn't have gone for two there. Yesterday, I would have. Everybody points to the overtime, and no one's pointing out there were 42 seconds left in the game. I think Rodgers might have won at regulation with a field goal, so it wouldn't have mattered. Even if they got it, I'm not so sure it would have mattered here against that secondary. So that's why I would have gone for it there as well, because if you don't get it, or even if you get it, you're hoping two things. One, that you can stop with 42 seconds, and then once again that you win the coin toss here. You don't know if you're going to get either one there. So I had no problem going for it yesterday. Though I probably run a different play, Mr. Lisi. Running the same play that failed against Pittsburgh, and with the running quarterback, I don't want to take away two-thirds of the field. You know, I just wouldn't have run that play. So that was disgusting. And Marquise Brown, by the way, was wide open, but the play's not designed to go to him, so they'll never know here. This game against Cincinnati this week is monstrous. Monstrous, to put it nicely here. I think the Ravens are a dying team, although Huntley, I thought, played great yesterday. Good man, but I think they're a dying team here. Now, depending on what happens tonight with Cleveland Raiders, Cleveland loses this game. Cincinnati wins next week. This division's all but over. Cincinnati might be able to claim this after all here. But I thought Zach Taylor cost them the game last week against San Fran by playing too conservative, and he tried to do it again yesterday. He was coaching to lose. Once they got up 15-10, we're not throwing the ball anymore, pretty much. We're not throwing the ball down the field anymore at all. They drive after drive. He was lucky that Bridgewater got hurt. And Locke couldn't do much there, but just kept playing so conservative. It's like, they get a touchdown, they win. You're not up by two scores. It's weird how they approached that game. Hated it. Really hated it.
You know why? You know why he probably coached like that? Fangio. It's like everybody's kryptonite. Fangio. That's it. It's like almost like a fungi. Vic Fangio, the mold. You can't get rid of it. It's like, oh, no, he's suffering from Fangio complex. Run. Yeah, Joe Judge and Vic Fangio and Matt Nagy went to the same school of coaching. Run. Every single play. It's amazing. It's amazing how they got head coaching jobs. And I'll bash Nagy. I'm backing him in this ball game against Minnesota. I know I'm crazy in that regard. I talked myself right out of that. But at the end of the day, bigger picture, if they get this victory, and I agree with you, I like them -2.5 at home. I think that maybe Baltimore just expended so much energy. I'll tell you what, Joe Burrow in a playoff type of atmosphere and environment, kid wins, baby. Especially if he's catching points in a playoff type of game, this team could maybe make a run the way that defense has been playing.
Not the way they're being coached right now. I'm not going to let them throw the ball. And maybe Mixon got hurt last night, too. It looked to be an ankle/knee, although he did moving around looked good on the sideline. But then again, so was Godwin yesterday when he got hurt. And now he's out maybe the rest of the season here, rest of the regular season. So we'll see here what's going on. But like I said, I don't trust Zach Taylor at all. I didn't like him coming in. Probably didn't quite have the hatred that you had for him, but close. And seeing him now coach these last couple of games, it looks like to me like he's coaching where not to get yelled at by the media. You know, oh, no, I was running the ball. No interceptions were thrown here. That sort of thing. Where he doesn't want to get yelled at, doesn't want to make the mistake here, rather than coaching to win games here. Hate to see that.
All right, let's look at a 4 o'clock matchup because it's a little bit juicy, at least on paper. Kansas City laying a double-digit price to Big Ben Roethlisberger and the Pitt Steelers. 10-point underdogs, minus 110 either way. 46.5 is the total, George. You give Pittsburgh any shot on the road here to pull this ball game out, or more importantly, at least cover the number against a very hot Kansas City Chiefs team that now has a couple extra days of preparation after that Thursday night win against L.A.?
Do I give them a shot? Sure. I'll give anybody a shot. Do I think they're going to do much damage here? No, I don't. Kansas City's playing well, just too well. They didn't look great against the Chargers. They didn't. The Chargers more figured out a way to lose that game than anything else, going for all those fourth downs, which I'm not blaming them for either, by the way. They're consistent in their approach. It's what they do. And that being said, I don't think it was going for the fourth downs that lost them that game as much as not executing. The plays were actually right. They didn't catch the ball. Pittsburgh is... It's a massively important game in Kansas City, by the way. They always get to determine who wins this division. All right, they play Pittsburgh this week, and then they play Cincinnati the week after. I mean, my God. Talk about fun there for those two teams. Like I said, I don't see much yet. Can Ben keep up with Mahomes? Kelsey looks good again. You know, can they stick with Tyreek Hill? Like I said, there's always a chance, always a puncher's chance here. But, no, it's in Kansas City, too. Give me the Chiefs.
How many games, remember Kansas City failed to cover, what was it, like 9 straight games?
They were on 9-1 or something.
Yeah, something like that, right? Now this could be the other way because you look at some of the teams that they have covered against just going off the non-cover against the Packers, right? So they win in cover against the Raiders. They beat your Cowboys in cover. They beat the Broncos, cover. They beat the Raiders again, cover. They beat the Chargers, win in cover. I mean, now they could be on a heater till the end of the year where you don't want to buck that trend. So laying 10 might seem like a big price, but, you know, they are the best team in the AFC right now. So I think early on I would lay it, but I do like the over, though. The 46.5 for this type of matchup, I mean, usually you're getting Chief games in the 50s, right? Went over against the Chargers. I mean, Pittsburgh gives up a lot of yards. I mean, I don't see Pittsburgh's defense playing like the Tampa Bay or New Orleans defense for that matter. I think over 46.5 could be a play.
It could be. Like I said, it wouldn't shock me here, but I don't think the Steelers have enough here. I think it's amazing they're still where they are, the way they have a shot to win this division. But no, Steelers are done.
All right, well, when George and I come back, we'll wrap it up with potentially some weekly specials for week number 16. Keep it where it is.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Hey, show. George and I have been discussing Week 16 action. We've been bashing some teams, praising some teams. I called Julio Jones a complete bust at this point in the season. Only 25 receptions, no touchdowns, about 325 receiving yards. Well, guess what? FanDuel did give a weekly special this week with San Francisco and Tennessee squaring off, George. It's 6-1 for Julio Jones and George Kittle, each to have 75-plus receiving yards. Kittle did have 90. He's been on a heater as well. All he does is catch touchdowns and sail over his in-game totals. So I have no doubt about Kittle being able to achieve that number, but any doubt about Julio Jones at 6-1, I would say no early on here.
No, I'm completely with you there. Although, once again, if he is healthy, well, that's the way to beat them, right? Through the air, got to throw the football. But relying on him to be healthy, yeah, I'm going to pass on that. Kittle, by the way, got banged up in that game as well. So we'll need to keep an eye on him also. Although I think he's going to end up being all right. So let's keep an eye on both guys throughout the week.
Okay, we also talked about Kansas City and Pittsburgh in last segment. T.J. Watt to record one-plus sack and Patrick Mahomes to throw three-plus TDs. What a combo that is. Plus 250 on FanDuel for Week 16.
Ooh, I can get behind that.
Yeah?
I think I can get behind that, yeah.
Three-plus I mean, I would like touchdowns?
I would like to get a little bit better odds than that. You know, the one thing is this. We are coming up a week, by the way. This is the worst week for touchdowns in the NFL. There are still games left, so we'll see what happens here. In 27 years, as far as touchdowns, only 40 were scored. Only 40! So, you know, it's maybe we're doing the wrong time here. Now, before I do bet any bet by that, by the way, I'd also want to check to see what the weather is going to be this week. Could be very bad. That would change my mind.
Keep an eye out for that. Also, another weekly special, 3-1. Jonathan Taylor, James Conner to combine for 3-plus touchdowns. For George Kurtz, our great producer, Andrew Torres, I'm Joe Lisi. Enjoy the games. We'll see you tomorrow.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.